We're up to Genesis chapter 29, and we'll recap quickly from last week. If anybody wants to brainstorm what we talked about in 28. Yeah. So, do we remember the promise of God to Jacob in the dream? He says to him in chapter 28, verse 15, he says to him, "Behold, I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken." And you will notice that I'll keep repeating this verse throughout the next four chapters, because it really encapsulates everything that God is doing in the life of Jacob, and in the life of each and every one of us. Okay? So, I also like people to interrupt me and to ask questions. Because if you don't, I'll interrupt myself and ask you questions. Agreed? All right. Absolutely.
Actually, we have here for chapter 28 and 27, we have four questions.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have any promises from heaven or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He just gave him earthly blessing. And of course, we find the other blessing for Esau from his father. It's a little bit in its value from his father, from his brother, because of the situation that happened. The third one came from Esau to his son Jacob. But it came after the babies. When Jacob obeyed his father and mother to go back to his original land to get the wife from there, he obeyed him, his father. Then we hear the blessing here come from heaven. And in this blessing, we have another situation to continue. The God himself appeared to Jacob and gave him the force with the promises for him and for his descendants. So whatever we could kind of reverence and not do from the earthly things, he could give us easy.
Mm.
And with whatever we could do it by trickery or twisted way, we could take it if you like. If you it will make you happy, take it. But whatever we got from the Father by obedience, it will work more.
Mm-hmm.
It will work with the heaven. And all the promises, the heavenly promises, and God Himself appeared to Him after this heavenly promise from His Father by obedience. So if we obey our Father, we deserve that God will be in our way and appear to us and talk to us. But if we don't obey our Father and our Mother, the Church, of course, this is like an application for what is happening. If we don't obey our Lord, try to get the benefits with any threatening or whatever. So the thing it would be just carefully not to do.
Yep. So, Uncle, what's your name? Bedi summarized really good the last few chapters. So he's saying that basically he's linking obedience to heavenly blessings. And he's saying that when Jacob finally submitted to the authority of his parents and to the authority of God, that's when heaven intervened in his life and revelations were made to him in the form of heavenly blessings. Of course, we agree. That's a very nice contemplation. Thank you, Uncle. Now we're going to Jacob and Rachel, and we'll read together. Now Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the east, to Laban. So he took So he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would draw the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. Okay, so Jacob. Sorry, I know which book. Jacob, now after the refreshment and the promise, he's renewed, he's refreshed. He goes to the uncle in Haran, and you know, he kind of like susses out the city, and he sees that they're all gathered by the well as people commuted at the time. Okay. Now the fathers, remember what we said last week about Orthodox. For me, I have to make a distinct line between Orthodox interpretations, historical interpretations, and so forth. So if we're looking at purely the Orthodox interpretation, the well resembles something in the New Testament that Jesus and his disciples used to practice. Can anybody guess what that would be pointing towards? What's the well resembling? Why is there a stone, you know, covering the well, the mouth of the well? Where in the New Testament, not in the Gospels, do we see a stone covering something? Come on, guys.
Tomb of
Jesus. Tomb of Jesus. Excellent. So the well here, the fathers say, resembles baptism, or the being burst into the new water or the New Testament. Okay? And remember what we said last week about Jacob going to find a wife? Remember we linked it with the farmer finds a wife show or something? I always make things like that for you guys to link it so you can remember. So farmer finds a wife. Jacob goes to look for a wife. And that also resembles Christ and the church. Because we God married the church to himself. Okay? So one of the ways that God marries the church to himself is through baptism. Okay? Yeah, so Jacob said to them in verse 4, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" They said, "He is well. Look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "It is still high day, and it's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the shepherds are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we will water the sheep." So what Jacob was saying to them is saying, why don't you hurry up and do it? Because it's still high day, means like the sun is still out, it's still early in the day. Why are you waiting till everybody comes? And then they explained to him that that's the custom of our people, that we wait till everybody gets there, and then in turn of order, when they reach, they go in, right? Now, going back to the tomb of Jesus, who was waiting for Jesus to resurrect? Because it says they were all gathered there at the tomb of Jesus, or at the well. Who's gathered at the tomb? What happened on the day of at the point of resurrection? What do we know from the Gospels happened? You can just call out. Yeah? You can just call out. The what? The Marys went to the tomb, yeah? And what happened at that point? What did we know happened at the point of resurrection when Jesus rose from the dead? There were certain things that happened. Sorry? They were worried about who removed the stone, absolutely. And then what do we also know about the people that were like that laid asleep before the resurrection? What did Jesus do in Hades? Yeah. So the prophets started appearing to the people in the city. Okay? And they were all gathered at the tomb, the fathers say, like all the dead before had been waiting for that moment that Christ would come and take them out. Okay, so it represents those in the what they call the natural world, So before, now we're at the point, of Genesis, where we still have not reached, you know, Joseph and the rest of it, and then Moses and the Exodus, and we have not received the divine law from God. Okay, that's what we know commonly as the Mosaic law. Before that, there was a law governing our hearts and our minds and our spirits, and that law is still with us today, and has always been, and that is the moral law, okay, or the natural law, that tells man, any man, Christian or non-Christian man, the difference between right and wrong, okay? And that's the human universal law, okay? So when Joseph said, I cannot do this in the sight of man, I mean in the sight of God, he did not really have the commandments yet to tell him that adultery was wrong. In his heart, he felt that that would not have been the right thing, okay? So that's what they call the natural law. And that kind of works through the conscience, your own individual conscience, okay? So those people that did not know the law of Moses will still be judged according to the natural law, okay? Those who are known by Mosaic law will be judged under their own law. And that's what St. Paul really says in the Old Testament. Each will be judged according to their common law. Now, we've got now this beautiful imagery at the well, okay? That all the shepherds and all the sheep are waiting. What was Rachel doing? This is good for the girls. Was she waiting for her husband? She's sitting there going, counting the days. What was she doing, girls? Like, make me proud. What was Rachel doing? Come on. What was Rachel doing? She was? Yes, you said it right. She was coming with her own sheep because she was a shepherdess. She was working. She was working. She wasn't waiting for Prince Charming to come and save her. She wasn't, you know, waiting for someone to come and carry her away. She was working with her own hands and she was doing her own thing, okay? And that's a nice model for us as well, to continuously be working and trusting the Lord and keep busy and do what's right, you know, in our Father's house, okay? Like what's right by our means. If we have the effort and the ability to work and keep busy and keep ourselves, you know, evolved and improved, that's a really good thing. Rachel also resembles the church because Jacob came to marry the church. Okay, and it's always good that the church is busy and in a form of service. Okay, so that's another way you can look at it. But I will always take that, right, because it's a good one. Okay. Verse 9, now while he was speaking, that refers to Jacob, while he was speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. So Jacob told Rachel he was her father's relative and Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father these words. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to the house. So he told Laban all these things. Now Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. So something really lovely happens when Jacob meets Rachel. Okay, and he finds out that she's his cousin. He does a few things, right? He removes the stone for her. He serves her, like Christ serves the church. Okay, he kisses her. And the fathers say that kiss resembles the consummation between husband and wife, in a way, because it's also mentioned in the Song of Songs. Now, we are reading this in the New Testament, so in light of the New Testament, there's a consummation of marriage or Holy Communion, okay? And really, I know some people are a bit, not troubled, but it's a bizarre way to look at the relationship, but it is an intimate relationship. Just the way God wants a husband and wife to be intimate. He wants the intimacy with you, okay? He wants to know you personally. He wants to know everything about you. He wants you, you know, as you, body, mind, and soul. He wants all of it, okay? So that's really a beautiful imagery. And then after he kisses her, right, he weeps because he's longed for her. And what do we see at the Last Supper? Jesus says something really beautiful. He says, with fervent desire, I desire to have this Passover with you. Like it's in the Jewish translation, Hebrew Greek translation, because it's the New Testament, it's a powerful metaphor. It's like a husband longing for his wife. I've longed to have this last supper with you. You know, I want this with you. I want to break my body and my blood so you can share and become one in me, because that was the prayer he prayed in John 16, that they may become one with me as I'm one with the Father. So to God, he builds an imagery of unity. That's how strong his love is. He doesn't want a part of you. He doesn't want a piece of you. He wants all of you. Okay, it's like a mad lover just chasing his, you know, bride. That's the imagery that the fathers of the church always have, you know, in the New Testament or in New Reflections or commentaries reflecting to us over and over again. Okay, so it's always good to read it with that passion. And then he weeps. Okay, and then Rachel then starts to take him in and introduces him to her father, and then they welcome him and embrace him, you know, in their households. Now also, I'll tell you a short story. You guys might find this really funny, but it's true. Jacob must have been really relieved at that point, because remember that in the dream, he was panicking a little bit. He was like, God, if you take me to Haran and back to this land, I'll vow my task to you. And he built an altar and he consecrated it. And we read that in chapter 28, right? So, you know, Jacob was still in the part of evolving a relationship with God. He still didn't know him fully. Okay? Still like kind of testing the waters a little bit. Right? So it reminds me of a story. This is a true story. Happened to me this year. I drive up to the Central Coast once a week because I have my placement there for a day. Right? And the funniest thing happened. Remember those crazy storms that happened earlier this year? Like they were crazy, crazy, crazy storms and people weren't leaving the house and stuff like that. They were actually much worse at the Central Coast. So that when I got off the highway, all the electricity was shut down. It was like havoc. None of the traffic lights were working. I felt like I went back 70 years, no electricity anywhere, because my navigator wasn't working because there was no connection. I had to stop at the petrol station and the guy had to draw me a map of how to get to my place. I'm like, this is so like, you know, I didn't have a street directory. No one uses street directories. And I felt like it was a long day. Like that trip usually takes an hour and a half. I kid you not, guys, it took me 4 hours and I was drenched. I was drenched from head to toe because walking in and out of the car, I had no umbrella. You know, I had nothing. Because it happened last minute and I wasn't prepared for it. Like usually I travel after uni, so I didn't stop by home to get my things. It was horrible, right? And then I finally make it in like a terrible, terrible condition. I'm really cold, really tired, and I'm really hungry. Not a good combination for me. I'm just very cranky. I have this was at St. Mark's Retreat House, so I usually have a key because everyone gives me a key because I go there every week. I'm opening the key to the door and I find whole bunch of ladies I've never met before, they're on retreat. So there was a double booking. I'm like, there's no way I'm going home. Even if I have to sleep on the kitchen or bathroom floor, I'm sleeping the night. And I just wanted any kind of mercy. Like I said, just like, let me. As soon as they saw me, there was a bit of an awkward moment. And then we realized there was a double booking. And they said to me, this was ladies from Archangel Michael. They said to me, go talk to Taswani, who's Abuna Mina Nawatala's wife in the other house, and just let her know that you'll stay with us. I'm like, okay. Because I just said to them, I usually let Abuna Mark know, and that's fine. No. In our tradition and in our customs, you have to let her know because everything has to go through her. And I said, okay, I'll respect you. I went to her and just kind of said hello, and she just took one look at me. She's like, have you eaten? I'm like, no. She's like, have you drank? No. Where did you come from? And she was so hospitable and so kind and fed me. And she just like made me feel so, so, so welcome. So after this long, weary journey, I was like, it just felt like comfort. It was just peace. You know, I was saying, I just want to sleep on the bathroom floor. But now I'm just being treated like a royalty because I'm the guest to them, right? And because the house was full of mothers, I got fed every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, like I was just sitting there and like cups were coming, dishes were going, and I was like, yeah, man, this is pretty good. Like I usually come on my own, I get takeaway and I put it in the bin. Like it's pathetic. So we just get the idea of how relieved Jacob must have felt, because that's why he cried and he wept, because he felt at home. He felt like, oh, I always just wanted to come back alive. But look at that. And Father Dawood Lemay uses this passage when he refers to that verse in the New Testament, when God does exceedingly abundantly above all we could ask or think. Sometimes I thought this day cannot get any worse, I assure you. And it did get worse because the power was out, so the day of counseling that I had was cancelled. But thank God I found out when I was warm and cozy and, you know, untroubled by the weather conditions around me. and I had time to recruit till the weather got better and I went back home. So we see how God's generosity even comes to us at times in moments of trouble through other people's hospitality and other people's kindness. Okay? All right. And then we read. Okay. Then Laban, from verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my brother, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel, and so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your sister, your younger daughter." So Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than any man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. That's a nice one for the gentleman. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled that I may go into her." So basically, there's a month of customary hospitality, and that month is over. And then Laban says to him, "I want you now to start earning wages and earning money off the land." And Jacob has nothing in his pockets, mefalas. He's coming to get a new bride. No car, nothing of that sort that you guys see in movies. So he goes, "I have my health. I'll give you 7 years of my wages," and that's her dowry. And that was a custom that was accepted in the traditions back then. And for those of you who served in Kenya, I'll tell you a funny, funny story. You can laugh all you want. Amber Bolis, once when I was in Kenya, was serving with him in the villages. We did visitations. And he used to always joke with me. So I'll say this in Arabic and I'll say it in English. He goes, "Gelika bislota." I go, "Sayedna." He goes, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Piari sinakil." You know, gave me 20 sheep and 4 cows. And he was being really silly. So what he was saying is, in the Kenyan tradition, a man saw me and he said, "You know, I'll give you a dowry of 20 sheep and 4 cows for this girl." Apparently, like, that's a really expensive dowry for their village. Sayedna was mucking around with me, saying, "You know, you shouldn't reject someone like that." But believe it or not, these customs in Africa continue till today. Okay? Always, I'll start with a story just to keep you awake. All right, and then we know that guys fall in love with their eyes and girls fall in love with their ears. So because Rachel was beautiful, he fell in love with Rachel. What the fathers say about this is that Leah represents a type of, you know, like the Jewish nation, okay? Because remember, Jesus came to marry one bride, which is the church, right? But the church is Rachel, okay? And then the fathers say that the Jewish nation is represented by Leah, okay? And I want you to keep that in your thoughts as we go on, because God did come for both Jew and Greek, or, you know, Jew and Gentile at the time, okay? Okay, and there's something we can reflect on here together, might as well, since we have a bit of time. It says that one of the boys from our church, they said to him, I think he was 19, 20, "What's your favorite verse in the Bible?" He says, "I know this is going to sound really cheesy, but, you know," he goes, "I like the verse, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they only seemed a few days to him because of the love he had for her." And everybody started laughing and begging him out, okay. But, you know, it was very brave of him to admit that. But it also shows you the kind of character that God aspires for us to be. And it's not just about loving someone in a romantic sense. It's about having a love for the service that you're, you know, or your vocation, okay? Like, when you do something with love, it teaches you that it passes by so much easier, and the pleasure in it is so much lighter. Like, it's not, you don't feel like you're carrying such a burden when you're doing it. You're doing it with joy. So, yeah, it carries the thorns in the pain, of the pain that could sometimes be if you didn't love it, okay? And that's the state that we need to be in when we're serving somebody else. We need to be doing it in that love, in that cheerfulness. Okay. Does anybody want to add anything else? Because I feel like I've been talking a lot. Anybody want to add anything? Uncle? You want to add anything? Actually, Pope Shenouda also says something really nice about this. He says that the greatest, look, I'm trying to translate it from Arabic to English, so he says the greatest form of, the best form of labor is the labor of love, because in it is so much joy and sweetness that it gives you rest. Because then that's the ultimate labor of the Christian person, that they have to labor in that love and have that goal of love. 22. So now the band gathered together all the men of the place and made a wedding feast. Thus it came to pass in the evening, he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. So Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a handmaiden. Then it came to pass in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is it that you have done to me? Was it not Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before their firstborn. Fulfill her week, and I'll give you this one also for the service. You will render me another 7 years." Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. Then he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. Laban also gave his handmaiden to his daughter Rachel as the handmaiden. Then Jacob also went in to Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. Okay, now this is the part where you guys have to do, you know, more talking than me. Because something here interesting happens to Jacob. What happens? Anybody? Yeah, so he was deceived. Is that right? Yeah? And why is that interesting? Yeah. And that's pretty much what everybody's saying. But why I see it as interesting is that people go, "Oh, it's karma." They give it different names. It's karma. And some people love to know that God punishes, or have to prove that God punishes. And so you see God, punished him because you know, he did this to his brother. In fact, I don't disagree. I disagree with these interpretations. Because if God really wanted to punish Jacob, let's face it, give him to Esau. That's punishment. The man wanted to kill him. And he planned it even in such a devious way as we saw in the last chapter. That's how God punished. I mean, that's the ultimate punishment. But God doesn't want to punish us. Remember the promise I told you in that verse? God wants to restore us. He wants to fix us up. It looks like punishment. But he wants to fix us up. Like, if I am struggling with the sin of pride, okay, like Job. Job was not proud, but he was righteous in his own eyes. God looks at that and says, "No, I have to fix him up. He's my son. I cannot leave him in his state of misery, spiritual misery, social misery, you name it." So I always see a trend, and it's really, really puzzling. I promise you it's puzzling, but I've seen it with so many people. So many times. I will see a person who's grieving his mother. This happened, I know this person personally, and I saw him grieving his mother. He was very close with his mother. 29 when she passed away, 30, and he served his mother for a long time. Like, he used to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, feed her and do all of that, go to work, come back early and take care of his mother. And it was him and his younger brother that lived in the home, in the apartment with his mother. And his mother was a virtuous woman. Like, she was such a godly woman. Everybody knew that about her. Everybody loved her. And the church really felt the loss. I was a bit younger, but I heard these stories, from... Yeah, and I saw it. I wasn't close to any of the actual happenings and the events. But what I remember after that is after the mother died and we went to the funeral and we did all of that, 6 months later, this boy loses his younger brother in a car accident, and he witnesses his brother get crushed by a car. And the whole church is just like going... Like, the boy was actually going through a hard, harsh trauma, just losing his mother and serving her in the cancer, especially. Like, all of that was traumatic, and the boy was a mess. If anybody saw, he went on a holiday to try and recoup with his brother and recover from the trauma that he experienced. And his brother was engaging a young lady at the time,
So he thought before his brother moved on with his life to get married, they would go on a, like a bachelor holiday together, and it was nice, like it was a very nice Kentucky tour. Then we wake up to the news in the morning that I can't hit him, and we all woke up to this just going, what's going on? Like, didn't this boy go through enough? And then we start to ponder the mercies of God at the point where God, what's going on? Are you even in this? Do you even not know that this boy was already crushed? But what you'd find is that perhaps that was a harsh lesson, but when we see the fruits coming out of the service of that man's life that you know today, it's really, really wonderful. Because we see that God actually did that to heal him, not to destroy him. And you're thinking, that's really funny. It's an ironic way of healing someone. But sometimes God takes us further into the darkness and further into the valley, that we reach rock bottom, that we start to be molded again together, slowly but according to his image and according to his likeness. It's like that clay and the bone. We had a policeman in our church talk recently about his ordeals, and he's a Christian policeman, and he's the person like on the cover of Top Cop, it's a book selling at Quorum, and his name is Gary Raymond, a very famous Australian policeman, and he's a Christian. So he used to, through his police service, reach out to a lot of people and pray with them and bring them to Christ. And some of them were murderers that went into prison, but they came out as pastors and priests, and they preached because they came through this man and saw the love of God in this man. Very, very amazing. So we invited him to give us a talk, and he said something really interesting in the talk. Out of all the beautiful stories that he shared with us, there's one thing that remains with me. He said, God did not come to, like, change you. He came to demolish you. Oh God. You know, like, what do you mean? Like, God came to demolish you. He did. And don't take that as the worst meaning of it possible. He came to demolish you, so there's none of you left and all of him. And that's really the surrendering that we need to get to. Is it painful? Yeah, it's painful, really, really painful. But is it beautiful? It's really, really beautiful when we see what comes of it at the end. Pain is not always necessarily a bad thing. We shouldn't just look at it and go like, why is this happening to me? I'm a child of God. Like, the fathers have commented over the ages and said, this is not an uncommon thing, because you are the child of God. But God will take you through tests and trials to fix your character up. And it's usually in the area where you need it the most. And God knows what's in each person's heart. Okay? So I'll rest it here. But if you have any questions later, you can ask me. Or if you have questions now, you know, you can, yeah. Out of the symbols? What do you mean by symbols? Well, what the fathers say about that? Like, you want to draw the connection between Leah and Rachel? Yeah, so they say, which I was going to read that now, which is the last part, because Rachel was barren, and Leah starts to have children. So we'll read that, and then if that doesn't answer your question, we'll visit it again. Okay. So, all right. So we go to verse 31. But when the Lord saw Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore Jacob a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, the Lord has surely looked on my humiliation. Now therefore my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore Jacob a second son, and said, because the Lord heard I was hated, he said, therefore give me his son also. And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son, and said, now this time my husband will be on my side, because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore she called his name Levi. Now she conceived again and bore a son, and said, now I will give thanks to the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Okay, so the question is, how does the church fit into this? Is it the question? Basically, all I could get from the fathers is that Leah represented the nation of Israel. And the nation of Israel was fruitful. They had prophets, they had priests, as you can see from, and they even had the tribe of Judah, which eventually became the tribe from which David and Jesus came from, right? But the Jews rejected Jesus, right? So at this stage, they became no longer fruitful. And then Rachel takes over, okay? And she starts to produce children, but she was formerly barren. She was formerly barren because the Gentiles formerly had no Mosaic law. They did not know anything about the nation of Israel or, you know, inherited anything. They were pagans. They were idol worshippers. But they took the birthright as, you know, as they took the birthright of the first nation or the firstborn, which is Israel, okay? And that's all I can get from the fathers on that one. But if you want to add anything, you can. Also, for those of you that might be challenged later on, because Laban calls Jacob his brother, not his nephew, they say the term brother then is therefore a colloquial term for cousins or relatives of any sort. They're from the same house. And that's why when in the New Testament they say Jesus has brothers, we don't take that in the literal sense that Jesus had brothers from St. Mary. We say that they are brothers like cousins in that sense, because it was used first in this translation in that context. So just that's all that I can get from the fathers on that one. So I think this now takes us to the next chapter, which I'll go through with you next week, which is chapter 30. And then after that, I think somebody else will take over. But before I finish today, I just want to say something about why I mentioned that story about that boy that, you know, that lost his brother and his mother, and why God sometimes comes in hard on us on the areas that we are vulnerable in the most and hurting the most, okay? Jacob wanted a blessing. He was desperate for it. He lied to get it, you know? And when he was in the dream, he was still negotiating with God, right? And he said to God, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. And when he went to Laban, he wanted a wife, and he asked, and he worked. Like you can see, he's ambitious fellow, right? But if his ambitions are going to hurt him at the end of the day, God will fix that up. God will have to fix that up, right? So we know that in chapter 31 or 32, when he wrestles with the angel on the way back, okay, the angel asks him a pertinent question, and he says to him, there's one question that at the end of the the wrestling match between the angel and Jacob, Jacob says to the angel, which we know is God himself in the form of the angel, he says to him, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he's wrestling again. And then what does the angel ask him? What does the angel of the Lord ask him? And that takes us to the passage that I was referring to. He says to him, what is your name? Okay? Like we talked about last week in the Samaritan woman. She goes, what's this water that I might drink and never thirst again? He goes to her, tell me the name of your husband. Who's your husband? Like ill connection. Like, so when I want a blessing from God, he asks me a question that's so random. Like, what's your name? Okay, are you still getting to know me, God? Like, after all this wrestling match, I've been wrestling with you all night up until dawn. You're still asking me my name? Like, you've injured me, you know? And some of the scholars say it's a really beautiful question, because that was the question that he lied. When Jacob asked him, what's your name? He gave him the wrong name. He cheated him. So God said to him, I wanted to know that you learned the lesson. You'll give me your real name. Okay, because I want to know that your ways have changed and that you will not do that again. And then he reconciled him to his brother. And the Samaritan woman, the same thing, if we look in that passage. She goes, I want the water. I want the water so they may never thirst again. He goes, cool, give me your husband. Go get your husband. Water, husband, you know, what's the connection? The connection is, come back to me. Come back to me. Go repent of that one thing in your life. And that's why I say God is the ultimate healer. Who would have known that the Samaritan woman was waiting for the punchline to change her life? And who would know that that was the question that needed to heal Jacob? As a Christian counsellor, I always look at these things with amazement, because I say to God, you really know the inner person. No amount of training, no amount of skill, a priest, or even like anybody can do for a person. You are the ultimate healer. You know exactly what will heal us from the inside and make us better and whole again. And that's really our faith and trust is in you. Okay? And like Uncle said, all the earthly blessings are, God would not have minded to give Jacob at all. It was that obedience, it was that surrender that God was trying to get out of Jacob, because Jacob is a mighty force, he's a wrestler. okay, and stubborn, clearly stubborn. So God wanted to demolish Jacob and build what? Because God eventually gives him a new name. God wanted to demolish Jacob and build Israel. And Israel could not be in the character of Jacob. It had to be in the character of the new nation, of the new man that Christ was building up. Okay? That's all it is for today. Any questions? No? Glory be to God.